It is our great pleasure and privilege to continue this study in the book of Genesis. Last time we'd gotten through the 10th verse of chapter 12. Let's go back and read that 10th verse again. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. So here we have Abram in this land of promise, the land of Canaan, and he was serving God, worshiping God, building an altar to God as he needed to, and having God to visit him and renew the promise. But a famine came, and it says that this famine was grievous in the land. Abram no doubt feared that the land would not be able to support him and his family, this great company of people that were with him. And so he elected to go into Egypt, the land that was south of this land of Canaan. Verse 10 says, Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there. He didn't plan to go down there to live permanently, but just as a sojourner, just as a temporary dweller. But there's every reason to believe that if Abram had stayed in Canaan, that God would have adequately provided for him and his company. Let's notice he did not head back to his former country of Haran or Ur of the Chaldees. And this was only a temporary move because Abraham really did plan to come back from Egypt at a future time. So we're going to see, though, that this was not a wise move, that Abram was never instructed by God, as far as we know, to make this move into Egypt. So let us read, begin with verse 11 through verse 16. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarah his wife, Behold now, I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, they shall say, This is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, that thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. And it came to pass that, when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman that she was very fair. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her, and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abram well for her sake, and he had sheep and oxen and she asses, and men servants and maidservants and she asses and camels. Many times it seems that when we compromise the ways of God with the ways of the world, that this may be a good choice. The ways of the world often are profitable up to a point, and it's easy for us to misinterpret the prosperity of following the compromise as being proof that this must have been something that was according to God's will. And a Christian might become quite satisfied with this state of compromise until God finally has to chastise him, forcing him to get back into the walk of true faith. The chastisement may be given in any one of several different ways. One very painful chastisement to a true lover of God is to find that an ungodly person or persons now believe that you are living in conflict with your own beliefs. In other words, the principles you hold to be true, the message you've been telling others that they should be following, are now things that you can be justly accused of violating yourself. Whatever good example you have been trying so hard to set for others has now been nullified by this one imprudent act, and whatever good influence you may have had is now destroyed. This is what happened to Abram. As he entered this strange and mighty land of the Egyptians, he became aware of a danger that he had not encountered before. The Egyptians, like the Canaanites, were descendants of Ham, also through Mizraim rather than through Canaan. They were also worshippers of idols, immoral and cruel. Polygamy and sexual promiscuity were the order of the day. As he entered Egypt, Abram began to wonder what kind of an effect Sarah's beauty would have on some of these Egyptians. He realized that it was very possible that they could decide to kill him and his servants in order to have Sarah for themselves. He was now confronted with a situation which he had not anticipated before coming into Egypt. And this happens very often when a believer falls in the company of ungodly people. He reasoned like this. If he openly declared her to be his wife, he would probably be killed, and she would be taken into who knows what kind of an immoral behavior. If he said that she was one of his servants, his own life might be spared, but she herself would probably be taken and defiled in even greater ways. The best solution seemed to be for him to declare her to be his sister, and he may have reasoned that actually this was really true because she was his half-sister, according to Genesis 20, verse 12. This was still in the early centuries after the flood, and close marriages were still common and often necessary. Although this may have been technically true, it was given for the purpose to deceive someone, which is equal to telling a lie. But the reasoning would be along this line. If Sarah were considered to be his sister, then both she and Abram would be treated with respect, and his life would not be endangered, although this might mean that she would be regarded by the Egyptians as being available for sexual purposes. But this would be true also if Abram were killed so they could have her. So this deception seemed to be the best of a bad situation. Sarah no doubt agreed with this reasoning, so she went along with the half-truth. No doubt they were all wishing they had never moved to Egypt, but now it was too late. Hindsight is better than foresight. Ultimately, it turned out better than they could have expected. Instead of becoming involved with ordinary Egyptians, Sarah came to the attention of Pharaoh himself. She was seen by Pharaoh's princes, and they commended her to Pharaoh as a good prospect to become one of his wives. The word for commend is the Hebrew word halal, H-A-L-L-A-L, meaning to praise. This word is nearly always used meaning to praise God, but here it's first used in the Bible, and it refers to praising a godly woman. These ungodly men of Egypt did not know God, so they could not praise God. Pharaoh's princes could see something unique in Sarah. They not only saw a beautiful woman, she was very fair, they also saw an inner beauty with a meek and quiet spirit. In 1 Peter 3, verses 3 through 6, Peter says, "Whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting of the hair, and of wearing of gold, or of putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abram, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement," or that is, any alarm. Rather than taking her for themselves, the princes were constrained to praise her to Pharaoh himself. Pharaoh then sent for her, and she was taken into his house. But rather than defiling her, he evidently began considering her for marriage. And rather than murdering Abram as he had feared, Pharaoh began giving him many presents with flocks and herds and servants in abundance. So verse 17 of Genesis 12 says, "And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife." For a while, Abram's compromise seemed to be working very well. Sarah was still safe, and Abram was not only alive, but he was prospering. Many times sin deceptively appears to give good results in the beginning, but invariably the apparent benefits of sin are outweighed by the terrible consequences. In Abram's case, what would happen when Pharaoh actually decided to make Sarah his wife? Would both Abram and Sarah continue the deception at that point? Having involved themselves so deeply, did they have any choice? God had intended to bring the promised seed into the world through them. This situation created by Abram's deception could prevent that from happening. No doubt both Sarah and Abram spent sleepless nights filled with anxiety and prayer. Abram and Sarah loved each other and surely wished they had never left Canaan. Even peace and harmony in Canaan in time of famine was better than prosperity in Egypt with compromise to God's will. But what could they do now? They themselves could not extricate themselves from this terrible situation. But God was not helpless. The Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife, verse 17. Some way, Pharaoh found out that Sarah was actually married. The great attractiveness he had found in her was because of her relationship to the true God, and she was under the protection of that God, as was her husband Abram. So now verses 18 through 20 say, "And Pharaoh called Abram and said, What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, She is my sister? So I might have taken her to me to wife. Now therefore, behold thy wife. Take her and go thy way." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. Pharaoh was probably afraid to harm either Sarah or Abram, but he did sharply rebuke Abram, and of course Sarah would be included in this rebuke. Pharaoh had lost all respect and kind feeling for Abram and Sarah. They no longer could have any good influence on him or anyone in Egypt who knew about this lie of deception. Pharaoh seemed to recognize that God was with them, but this did not cause him to want to serve this God, so Pharaoh ordered them to leave his country, which they did, taking all the possessions they had acquired in Egypt. The trip back home must have been an embarrassing journey. Outwardly, everything had gone well. They had not only escaped the famine in Canaan, but had come out of Egypt with more possessions. Abram and Sarah were still together, and neither had been harmed. If they had been worldly people, they would have no doubt been very self-satisfied. But they were people of God, and they suffered a deep rebuke. They who were called to God and had been led by God into a strange land, who had been protected and blessed by God, and who should have testified unto others about the true and living God, who had all power, were now shamefully rebuked by an idolater, and justly so. They had lost their credibility with the unbelievers because of this lie. The Egyptians had at first been greatly impressed by them, and they might well have converted some of them to the true God. Instead, their fearfulness and compromise had caused the house of Pharaoh to suffer greatly, and the Egyptians finally came to despise their very presence, and probably many of Abram's own servants were disgusted by this whole turn of events. They should have never gone to Egypt in the first place. God would surely have supplied their needs in Canaan, even in times of famine. But even after going to Egypt, they should have been careful to protect their good influence, and by being truthful in all things at all costs. God would have protected them in Egypt without them having to lie. After all, he did protect them and provide for them even in spite of their lie. It's easy for us to be critical of Abram and Sarah as we read and look back at them. Hindsight is better than foresight. But if we'd been in Abram's shoes, we possibly would have done very similarly. We also may compromise in our daily lives and then rationalize about it as Abram must have done. We also need to learn the same lesson he learned, and many times we have to learn it the same way, often after we have lost our influence. We find ourselves being just rebuked by the very unbelievers we would like to win to Christ. 1 Corinthians 10, 12-13 says, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There is no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it." So we conclude the 12th chapter of Genesis. We now move into chapter 13.